My style can't be duplicated or recycled.
I am a traveler. A wanderer.
I'm not a disc jockey. I'm a human radio station.
Dante's Hot Tub with your host, Juan Rapido.
What a bummer!
On Radio Valencia, Wednesday, 8 to 10.
Countdown, take me away!
Thank you very much. You've been a delightful audience.
Rated Blonde.
We gave him line of favor. This is our name.
A cold coming. We have of it. Just the worst time of year for a journey, and such a long journey. The ways deep, and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter, and the camels galled, slow-footed, refractory, lying down in the melting snow. There were times we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces, the silken girls bringing sherbet, then the camelmen running away and wanting their liquor and women, and the night fires going out and the lack of shelter, the cities hostile, the towns unfriendly, and the villages dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. In the end, we preferred to travel all night, sleeping in snatches, with the voice ringing in our ears that this was all folly. Then, at noon, we came down to a little narrow valley, wet below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a watermill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door, dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wineskins. But there was no information. And so we continued, arriving that evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place. It was, you may say, satisfactory. All this, I am telling you, was a long, long time ago, and I would do it again. But set down this. Were we brought all that way for birth or death? There was a birth. We had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death before, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, yet no longer at ease here in the old dispensation with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death. And now, ladies and gentlemen, this is the moment which you may or may not have been waiting for, when we once again present a spanking new edition of the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio. Yes, dear fiends, this is indeed your irritating horror host, Dr. Howland Hour. Back again, after after a long journey, a long trip, many travails, and the onset of a disease which still has not released me from its clutches. But as long as this is going out into the world, I, Dr. Howland Owl, your irritating horror host, am doing the job I came here to do on this cold and rainy night here in the city of failed expectations on Radio Valencia. Our transmission in the mission. On 22nd Street, actually. Next to the makeout room. Not really on Valencia. Nor are we really radio. We are a podcast. And an odd podcast at that. And, of course, we continue in a long tradition of audio shows in the subgenius lapidary manner. When you see one of our many subgenius pamphlets or books, you will note the studded nature of the visuals, not designed in a slick way to lead the eye hither and yon by an ad agency, but rather many tiny, even competing modules of illustrative information. And these radio shows are the audio version of that visual method. We compile many strange fragments into what we always hope is a recognizable whole, but putting them together after we have done our bit, that is no longer up to us, but to you, our beloved audience. All of you out there, etherettes and rocket rookies. But can you hear me? Is this being heard? I did press the red button. Perhaps I'll check now with my good friend Sam, that is the SAM broadcaster. He will know. And will you look at that? The red button has been pressed, perhaps by skeletal fingers. And so, according to that datum, we are live. And it would be mistaken and even pretentious to say on the air, since we are nowhere near the air. We are on your computer screen or even your phone, your constant companion that you take everywhere and scroll when you should be enjoying the beauties of nature and the faces of humanity. To this podcast, it is my intention to travel to Dermophilia, the tattoo parlor nearby, where I hope once again to take up pen and do more illustration in the good old underground tradition. We shall see if that happens as well. In the meantime, all I can do is sit here and do some audio mixing, and ideally, culture mixing. Because many different threads go together to create the tapestry which shines in its many colors against the darkness of oblivion. Season turns, celebrating the birth of the white Christ, the little Lord Jesus asleep in the hay. How calmly he reposes. Until that obnoxious drummer boy starts beating and waking him up. The babe lies yet in smiling infancy, that on the bitter cross must redeem our loss, so both himself and us to glorify. But first, to those echained in sleep, the wakeful trump of doom must thunder through the deep with such a horrid clang as on Mount Sinai rang when the red fire and smoldering clouds outbreak. The aged earth aghast in terror from that blast must from the surface to the center shake when, at the world's last session, the dreadful judge in middle air shall spread his throne. And now let us look through the swirling mists of time for oddities and curiosities, for lack of a better word, and a word which indeed we embrace, monsters, from the Latin monstrum, or show. Yes, a monster is something to look at. A monster is something to be shown, as in demonstrated. And in the ancient world, monsters had a semi-divine status. Hermaphrodites, two-headed people, and the like were given worship as representative of the gods. And therefore, at this Christmas season, it is time. To introduce something monstrous.
Sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. Zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guest included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said,
whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on and flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool. Drag's a part of the band. And my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Boris sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And do my great. graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Voices beckon from long, long ago.
The stupid people.
The stupid clowns.
Hey, wait, we can't be showing these slides. Honk. You forgot your clicker so that everybody in the radio world knows the slides are changing.
Pictures of that crayfish. Yeah, you must have thought that was worth it. Oh, well, the light. Who killed the light? It's dark.
Who killed the show?
Who killed that little crawdad?
Oh, the show was careening down the mountainside when suddenly a wheel came off and the Indians showed up.
Yes, it was relying on
that
visual.
That always happens.
We suggest you just turn on your TV with the sound down and watch that.
TV.
We describe the fun pictures we get to see.
No, watch VJ Pussycat's TV.
But perhaps we can be cured.
And in the face of our
like a ham.
We don't deserve.
So here's another scene from the famous festival. And look, a bloody car and a grotesque car accident. There's the famous Doc's Duck with the famous stage and the famous personnel.
Yeah. Hello? What a pretty place.
Hello?
Goodbye. Hello.
Now they're a calling. They've come a knocking.
Called the wrong place.
Yes, you are.
Sorry.
Looking in the wrong place.
This is the Christmas number.
Yeah, the one on the right.
Don't you understand?
The water closet.
What about the closet upstairs?
When you hear this tone.
Oh, we don't have one of those. Sorry.
Look, you're probably the kind of person who's permanently depressed, right?
Yeah, like this one here.
Gory accident shot.
Well, I've been speculating all night. And
who snapped these pics?
I bet you really don't.
Well, you've probably been perfectly satisfied so far.
Well, you know,
dishing your way. You may be searching for
Yes, millions of years ago, dinosaurs roamed the earth. So let's not bring up the late Edward Gorey, shall we? After all, there is plenty of monstrous activity to come here in this holiday season. On the Ask Dr. Hal show live on radio, you might even call it a monster. Holiday.
It was the night before Christmas when all through the castle my monsters were having a yuletide hassle. The tree was all trimmed in ghoulish things like werewolf fangs and vampire wings.
It was a monster's holiday,
but they were up to no good.
It was a monster's holiday.
Didn't act like good monsters should. They found themselves a new prey. They planned to rob Santa's sleigh. They were making a list and checking it twice. Frankenstein wanted a shiny new trike. A new chain for Janusz, a brace for Igor's back. A speed shaver for Wolfman, a new cape for Drac. They were up to no good. Didn't act like good monsters should. They'd found themselves a new prey. They planned to rob Santa's sleigh. The mummy was to signal from the castle roof at the very first sound of a reindeer hoof. As Santa slid down the chimney wall, the zombies were to make off with sleigh and all. From beyond the moat there arose such a clatter. I jumped to the window to see what was the matter. Like a bolt of lightning, it happened so quick. And there in our midst stood old Saint Nick. He began to dig down deep in his sack and came up with the traction for Igor's back. Drac caught his cape, Frankie's trike made him behave. Even Wolfman was happy, now he can shave. And all ended well. Santa was really swell. No need to rob Santa's sack. Maybe next year he'll come back. So the children everywhere were spared the grief of losing their presents to a monster slave thief. Now the monsters love Santa and say they'll behave and never again rob sleighs or graves. Igor, what do you think of Santa now? Santa Ghoul! What was that he said as he drove out of sight?
Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-wolf open sleigh. Well, dashing through the snow. Where is that reindeer with the red nose? On Donner, on Blitzen, on Dancer, and Vixen.
Somebody turn off the light now. They're blinking.
Trapped in a little rubber bag.
Look at his eyes.
He thought, I'll never get out of here alive. And he
in
never
future
did.
Installments, we will trace Ronald Reagan's Yakinson origins from physiological
sure
and
felt good
numbers.
Show talents.
He had a bad show dream.
Felt on the head of the mountain gorilla is also found on the heads of several prehistoric hominids.
Everybody
species.
Has bad show dreams. Don't worry about it.
From the family tree, which led to Homo sapiens, modern man.
Our president
just a little bit.
African gorilla.
And then make him call 848-4425 because we're getting awful bored with trying to be funny without you because, well, this show is nothing without you. Well, actually, it's a lot more fun without you. So don't call 848-4425 because we don't want to hear from you. We don't care if you like this show or not. We don't care about anything, whether or not. Except whether we come to our little KPFA mail
Gary Gabo from Muslim.
Whether that check's there and whether or not Solari's waiting
Carroll
for us.
And Mobius Rex saying,
that's right. We don't care about you listeners.
Here on the little silly
show. We don't care that you write in those $20 checks every 3 hours or how often KPFA makes you send those checks in. That hell is some genius radio.
Of course, this is merely the top floor of the easy part. The hell where you don't even know you're...
Part of the package of those who swallow the big line. But we on the show like to go beyond the big line. Yes, we on the show like to expand the horizons beyond the limits of the religions that are
so... We like two or three big lines.
Expand your horizons, young man.
We like to go way beyond that to other countries and other themes.
Other planets.
Other planets.
Other races of Aunt Nancy presidents.
Showing a woman trying to sleep, but they're hovering above her bed. It's the hideous Trumpian effigy with its blonde top and orange skin. Just like on TV where they turn a piece of candy corn upside down and say, see, this is him. It's yellow on the top and orange on the bottom. You're a lousy audience.
It's a strange anomaly here. Oh, just step this way, Mr. President. Now turn your head this way. And you can see it, the anomaly is it's difficult.
I'm sorry, I don't see what you're talking about, Mr.
Turn your head this way.
Like this.
Okay, now.
Quick to find out what happened to his brain, though.
We have it here.
Oh, there it is.
This is your brain on right-wing politics.
Below the Capitol, John Kennedy's brain. In a small glass.
Yeah, it's in the giant spider the National Center.
Would you like to see your own brain?
Kennedy's brain there.
Overhead lamp.
This JFK must move to a new frontier of bodiless existence.
Yes.
And I pledge that every American will just want to have fun, but that's one thing they can't do. They can't engage, see? They can't engage. Maybe they could once long ago when the earth was free and young and life was hot and merry and sweet and the devil took the hindmost back then.
Don't let that devil back there.
Only those two great guys slugging it out in the heavens above and the blazing inferno beneath.
I've got a little taste of something really wonderful happening, by the way. The 118th annual Edgar Allan Poe Electric Memorial Concert is going to be held this coming Saturday night at 8:30 until the wee small hours of the morning at Hullabaloo. And that's October the 7th. And that's going to be a memorial concert and breakfast with Steve Miller's Blues Band, the Kaleidoscope, the West Coast Branch, Taj Mahal, the WCPS Memorial Electric String Band, Bluesberry Jam, and the Outlaw Blues Band. And it's going to be a real kicky thing. You want to be on hand for that on behalf of student mobilization to win the war in Vietnam. That'll be at the Hullabaloo.
Hullabaloo.
Tonight and tomorrow night, the Outline presents Trip 66 at Longshoreman's Hall Beach and Mason Streets on Fisherman's Wharf, featuring the sounds of the Grateful Dead, the Loading Zone, the Answer, the Seance of Sound. All these in continuous music from 9 to 1. Will encounter such spectacles as Columbus Needs Indians, the Merry Prankster.
For more tales from the Old West. You know, I, Dr. Howland Owl, was there, being 375 years old. I just had a birthday. And around the time of the Gadsden Purchase, I was in Tucson, Arizona. Then a sleepy Mexican village, suddenly annexed to U.S. territory. And you know, folks, the state of Arizona was the last of the lower 48 to be admitted to statehood. It was all a wild wilderness of cactus and Indians and rocks and critters, and it still is today. If you look at the map, the two major cities in Arizona, Phoenix and Tucson, are way down at the bottom of the state. Now, up there at the Grand Canyon, headwaters of the Colorado River area, you get Flagstaff. And constellated around like raisins in a fruitcake, you get Buckeye and Sholo. You know, I don't know how to answer the telephone, but it's being called, so let's see if I can do it. Hello, are you on the so-called air? Hello? Well, if they fixed the phone here, they never told me, your humble narrator, so sadly, I'm not sure I'm able to communicate. How about now? Can you hear me now? Well, this is pointless. Pointless! But let's try one more time. How about now? Can you hear me? All right, no more jingling and tingling and ring-a-linging on the telephone. That wasn't even invented in 1858. They didn't even have the telegraph going to the sleepy old barrio of the old Pueblo. But I'm telling you about those days of cowboys and shepherds, of Apache Indians, including that tribesman known as Bigfoot. And they didn't call him that for nothing, folks. His moccasins were 14 inches if you measured them. And if you could measure them, you were too close. If the hard work didn't get you, Mother Nature conspired with other factors to get you down. Ranch land was in remote areas where bobcats and lions and wolves and coyotes were a constant problem, not to mention rattly snakes, scorpions, and centipedes. All those predators would hunt for calves or isolated cows. When the ranchers found a victim, they buried it immediately where it was. Unless, for some reason, they had to get the carcass out of there. Then they hauled it away to an appropriate spot. Cattlemen considered this just one of the hazards of ranching life. But when a wild animal showed up, practically on their doorstep, that was a different situation. And the hunt was on. Arizona had its share of conflicts, murder, and the slaughter of flocks. The most famous one was the Tewksbury-Graham feud, which ironically started 2 years before the Tewksburys introduced sheep onto their land. When the cowboys said that, they thought it was a bad thing. A bad thing. The feud initially had nothing to do with the cattle-sheep issue. An original motivating factor in the animosity was, I hate to acknowledge, but it was racism, raw, naked racism. For the most part, sheep owners were Hispanic or Native American. Cattlemen were European derivative American. So you see, that's what they never show you in all them Western movies that they had when I was many years younger. Now, on an earlier podcast, I spoke about the Apache Kid, and as many knew, there were murders all the way down to the Mexican border, 67 miles away from where I used to hang my hat, and every one of them was laid to the Apache Kid. Of course, he couldn't have killed all those folks, but he wasn't around to defend himself. He was a convenient scapegoat, you might say. He wasn't that bad. But I was going to tell you some of the legendary lore of Arizona. You see, after 58, and especially, I mean 48, after 49 especially, everyone was crazy to mine for gold. And there was gold. There still is. And silver also. All those little eyesore towns, like Tombstone, are above a bunch of tunnels where mining operations took place. And I've been down in them. In fact, there is a book called Going Back to Bisbee by the late poet Richard Shelton, which talks about how I was down in there, in the tunnels beneath Bisbee, Arizona. Or was it Tombstone? I can't remember. But it's in the book. Me and my sister and my brother, my father and mother, and a clackety-tongued lady named Mrs. King. We thought we would never get out of there. She went on and on. She would say, now one day, a horse on the main street fell right through the street and ended up in the tunnel, because the tunnel was a little too close to the surface. And the name of that horse was Dewey. And if anyone ever asks you about those tunnels and what the name of the horse was, what fell through, then you can just tell him Dewey. And her speech was like this, and it went on and on and on, and we desperately wanted to get out, but only she knew the way out. And meanwhile, there were huge, deep shafts. My little brother almost pitched into one. And hard to see, old rusty pieces of mining equipment, shovel handles. It wasn't a standard tourist attraction. But in the Old West, you could say danger came in many forms. You could live in a town, and that provided a degree of security against being captured and tortured by the Native Americans. But that brought with it a trade-off for other dangers. Fires were a danger because everything was made out of wood, and very flammable wood. Palo Verde with creosote. And, for example, Jay Ivanovich in Tucson, he lost his fruit store when a fire started about midnight. When the alarm sounded, the town men rushed to douse the fire with their collapsible leather buckets. That's all they had. There was no newfangled fancy fire engine out in the back of beyond. They placed a ladder on the building wall, filled the buckets, and passed them up to the men situated along the ladder at various places. And these men heaved the water on what burning parts they could reach. Yes, that didn't end well. Frontier life was unpredictable. But that didn't necessarily mean pioneers had to do away with some of the comforts and small pleasures of everyday life. For example, in Phoenix, when it was just a frontier village, the first baker in the town was J. Bauerline. He used a small furnace made of adobe, and that bread tasted better than anything you could imagine. It was the only bread you could get, except for tortillas and that sort of stuff that the Mexicans had. As simple as his business was, he did have his problems. Now, I remember reading in 1872 in the local newspaper that last Tuesday the town had no bread and the baker had a holiday because an innocent dog upset the yeast. Well, by August 9th of that year, he had to pull down his oven and build a new one. I was just up in upper New York State. I know that's not part of the Old West, but my sister baked two wonderful pies for me. But then my sister's son brought her huge, bounding dog over, and in a matter of seconds, that dog managed to eat both of those pies. Well, that was a sad business. Yes, it was. Believe you me. Fortunately, she'd made a third pie, which was out of this world, a raspberry gooseberry pie. There's a tradition in our family of making pies. My niece calls herself the Pie Witch and has made just about every type of pie known to humanity, and some that ain't known to humanity. But for fancy victuals like that, you wouldn't poke around the old Pueblo, around Arizona, around Tucson or Phoenix, unless you were fond of Mexican food. And confidentially, I am. It's better down there than it is up here in California. As you approach the border, it takes on a different character. Not only do you have chimichangas, but you have huge cheese crisps with tortillas lying in them. And, well, I won't try to make everybody hungry in this podcast. Businesses did not always run smoothly. In addition to financial worries, there were dangers brought on by the rough frontier life. The Goldwater family encountered some of those. Yes, this is the same bunch that later on produced presidential candidate Barry Goldwater in the 20th century. His slogan, "In your heart, you know he's right." But he was another batshit crazy Republican. And what everybody else said, "In your guts, you know he's nuts." He talked about how our forces should be supplied with small tactical nuclear weapons, just about big enough to kill a fella. Oh yes, he didn't get elected. Instead, we put LBJ, that is to say, Lyndon Baines Johnson, in office. But back in 1872, that is, the Goldwaters ran into a spot of trouble when they were driving along the road from Prescott to Ehrenberg on store business. Now, I have here a copy of the Arizona Sentinel of June 22nd, 1872. And this says that the Goldwaters and Dr. W.W. Jones were traveling in two buggies. 14 miles later, near Mint Valley, they were attacked by Apaches. According to the newspaper, the three gentlemen could, of course, offer no resistance, and their only means of escape was to outrun the engines. The band pursued them for about 4 miles down the road, when they fortunately met a party of white men traveling in the direction of Prescott. This is what it says in the newspaper. This additional strength caused the savages to abandon the fracas and head out to their mountain hideaways for safety. During this Indian attack, Joe Goldwater received a shot in the back somewhere over the shoulder blade. His brother Mike had two balls through the rim of his hat, and Dr. Jones escaped with only a few bullet holes through his shirt and coat. They drove to Skull Valley. I've been there. About 18 miles from the point of attack. Once there, Dr. Jones was able to examine the wound received by Mr. Goldwater. He probed it, and boy, did Mr. Goldwater shriek. But he was never able to get the ball out, or even find the ball. It stayed in Mr. Goldwater's back as a reminder of this colorful encounter. As the towns grew, so did the need to get the news out, especially in booming mining areas such as Tombstone. Tombstone, Arizona. I've been there. I've walked on Boot Hill. And, let's see, when was it? In the 1960s, I was there, and I was parched and thirsty. And I went into an establishment and got a glass of ice-cold 7-Up. It tasted like heaven. Better than anything has ever tasted before or since. That's what the heat and dryness of Arizona will do for you. Anyway, in 1880, John Clum arrived in Arizona. Before he left his home, he sent a small press, some type and other materials necessary for printing a newspaper out west by covered wagon. And that was the beginning of the Tombstone Epitaph, one of the Frontier West's most famous, or you could say infamous, papers. Conveniently, Clum was also the mayor of Tombstone at the time of the famous Earp-Clanton feud. You must have heard of that. Marshal Wyatt Earp had to do with old man Ike Clanton and his brutal sons. Rather than go over that old stuff, I think I'll check my phone, which just dinged. Somebody was dinging me on my phone. What's it say here? They want me to come over and draw cartoons. I'm going to do it tonight when this year show is over. That's right. Sparsely populated West, where the law was mostly the gun, and they said 2 6-shooters beat 4 aces any day. Well, it called to certain types of men. Men who were independent, mostly loners, and who lived life the way they chose without bowing to conventional behaviors or society's petty rules and regulations. Lars Hagensen was such a man. A big Norwegian, he arrived at Prescott, Arizona, and worked the area before deciding to try his luck in Bisbee. I recommend going to Bisbee, my friends. Bisbee is a wonderful place. Now, I'm not talking about the modern town of Bisbee with its ugly gas stations and burger joints. No, I'm talking about the giant gravel pit, the giant hole in the ground where they extracted the treasures of nature. And on the other side of that, it's like San Francisco with the Victorian buildings on the many hills. It's old Bisbee. That's the place you should go. And visit the Copper Queen Hotel. They'll take real good of you. Anyway, the thing about Lars Hagensen, he had burros and other gear, as many miners did, but he traded all that stuff in and bought a bicycle. That's right. He rode and walked the 600 miles into Bisbee in 14 days. He was quite the sight on his bicycle, freewheeling down the Mule Mountain Pass. He claimed the distinction of being the first bicycle owner in Bisbee. Hagensen started in the mines as a mucker, as we called it, and worked the mines for 40 years. One night, when he went into the newspaper office to pay for his subscription, Hagensen discovered he had lost his tobacco pouch. He decided to run a classified ad to see if he could recover the pouch. Looked to be in poor financial condition, and the thoughtful newspaper man suggested that before he spend the money on the ad, he might want to retrace his steps. Remembering he was at the post office just prior to visiting the newspaper office, Hagensen clumped off down the street and and he went there to check that area, and he returned with a greasy old tobacco sack bulging with paper bills. He unwrapped a $10 bill, which seemed to be the smallest denomination in the roll. "How much money do you have in that pouch?" he was asked. "Say, Tank, I got more than $700. "Great Scott, man, you shouldn't carry that much money around with you. Someone might rob you." The wise Norwegian said, "You, Tank, you be robber?" "Oh, no, of course not," replied the affronted newspaper man. "Well, you and me is the only ones know this." Haagensen decided to leave his money to the president of the Miners and Merchants Bank, who was also the president of the Shastuck Den Mining Company of Bisbee. His newspaper friend was astounded. "My gracious sakes, man," said the news hound, "that fellow has millions now. He doesn't need any more." "Just the same, he do me a good turn a couple times when I was sick. I never forget mine old friends. He gave me a job, and when I was sick, he paid the bill. And by golly, one time he buy me a pair of pants when my ass was sticking outside." Well, anyway, Haagensen lived to be 80 years old, despite the fact that he smoked the strongest tobacco in a dirty old pipe and ate garlic by the pound. Boy, did that fellow reek. When they laid him to rest, an entourage of cosmopolitan society followed his cortege to the Bisbee Evergreen Cemetery. Takes a cow to make one of those cow pies, VJ Pussycat. Don't criticize my sister's culinary ability. Just have another Miller beer.
Miller tastes too good to hurry through, but when it's time to relax,
well, one thing is clear.
Miller stands clear.
Beer after beer.
If you've got the time.
If you've got the time.
We've got the beer.
What beer?
Miller beer.
If you've got the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you've got the time, we got the beer.
Spontaneous applause.
And, you know, a few comments going, great show tonight, you know.
Great. I'm glad they like this show. You know, we sweat blood to put it together. And some people don't
I don't think I got
don't appreciate it.
I got the idea. People that don't congratulate you are probably on the fence.
Now I've got to wipe this blood away.
You know, like, oh, boy, does that guy suck. I'm not going to even look at him when he walks by.
Show's back. Show enough. From the Puzzling Evidence Entertainment Network.
Let us begin.
We're here again.
Let us begin the express. Let us begin.
Lettuce and mayonnaise, mustard, the mustard seed of faith.
And lettuce with no tomato. With
mustard and onion.
And let us reason together.
Relish, I would. I'd relish such a potation. The bread of life.
No, it is true. We must reason together. We must stand together.
Not raisins. I don't like those, but we
must huddle in together, surrounding the young, and protect the herd against the attacks of the cornus.
Just squeeze in here.
Squeeze? Oh, you're not supposed to drink that stuff in here.
Keep those doggies rolling, rawhide.
No, he's got a nose for it.
Through wind and rain and weather, hell bent for leather.
Everybody's getting ready for
wishing my gal was at my side.
Well, you know, if it wasn't for the honor.
All the things I'm missing, good fiddles, love, and kissing, waiting at the end of my ride.
Hey, now don't forget that But the FCC has certified that only 5 skins can be used on the air between the hours.
Oh, you'll thank us in later years.
Yes, in the later years.
Head him up, move him out, move him out, yes, head him up, move him out, rawhide. Like ride him in, ride him up, ride him down, ride him round, ride him in, rawhide.
What they call the multi-million membrane.
On what planet, I wonder?
On planet film interview.
Rawhide calculate.
What do you mean, the Earth film?
I do love will be waiting.
That's the false, Gary.
Yes, waiting at the end of my ride.
Or disguise his secret identity, known only to the core, the secret core. That's C-O-R-E core. And
not C-O-R-P-S. No, C-O-R-E core.
Night church people.
Once again, time to bite the wax tadpole.
I ain't biting no wax tadpole, and you can't make me.
I didn't think we had to do that anymore.
Oh, it's just an old KPFA tradition.
Well, let's get it out of the way. I'll just open up the bag here. And
let's get together with a glass of Schlitz. A friendly glass of Schlitz.
Oh, the wax is dripping on it.
Brewed with pride and just the kiss of the hops to put real gusto into every drop. Oh, let's get together with a glass of Schlitz. Real gusto in a great light beer.
It's dripping. Well, so what? We have flunkies to clean.
Have gun, will travel, reads the heart of a man. I mean, the card of a man.
Which we can't mention on the radio.
Dried wax up our throat.
A night without armor in a savage land. Yuck, dug a dug, dug a dug, dug a dug. His fast gun for hire led the calling wind. Yuck, dug a dug, dug a dug, dug a dug. A cold soldier of fortune was the man called Paladin. Yuck, dug a dug, dug a dug, dug a dug, dug a Paladin. Paladin, where do you roam? Yuck, dug a dug, dug a dug, dug a dug, dug a Paladin. Paladin, far from home.
Yeah, I heard you were in a terrible car accident involving a truckload of pigs with its brakes locked at 70 miles an hour.
That was a terrible truck accident. A semi crashing with a full load of pigs is not erotic in my book.
Neurotic,
yes.
What
about that rocky Iraqi reactor?
Speaking of which, did you get the new
what a reaction that reactor reacted upon.
What about it?
Well, it has those autopsy photos of Bob, you know.
And has that gorgeous picture of Connie on the cover.
Yeah, mine, yeah. That hideous smile. And if you look at the two front teeth...
What do you mean hideous?
It drives us wild.
What do you mean hideous? It does drive us wild. And it goes boing, 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 so we have to take a shower. How dare you say that that's a hideous
picture? Rolling Stone magazine and open it up to the beginning of the Tom Cruise interview, there's a picture of Tom Cruise. And if you stare at his two front teeth intently, his face will turn into a horrible vampire-like... No, really, this is...
Everyone knows Tom Cruise is a horrible vampire, and I never stared anybody's teeth intently.
That's what I like.
You can never tell where they
feel. It could drive you insane, though. If you look at the...
If you hadn't already been driven there 60 miles an hour years ago,
crashed into a wall of noise.
Now,
and butted your skull against the frustrating wall of futility. Well, too late. You let these rumors leak out and they came and stink.
I can't keep the lid on these things myself, you know.
There
my
need
PR,
be all the smegma attached.
My PR department's supposed to
no
take care of all
that. No stigma at all. Oh, world. Please.
Lies? Lies.
Yes, everything is peaceful.
No, lies.
Dominatrix is not sure that lies is not to allow.
Yes, and she can answer all of your questions.
But will she answer tonight?
Well, what's your favorite?
Keep it clean, boy.
Well, what?
Oh, he can't do that.
Spit it out, honey.
Okay. Well, that's not very clean. What's your favorite porno novel writer?
Porno novel writer?
Yeah, I think that's easy.
Well, I'll have to say my own significant obsessiveness writes a lot of excellent pornography. You can read it
in Penthouse
Hot Letters
Talk.
And Hot Talk.
Yeah, What kind of subject matter does he...
You didn't think subgeniuses are penetrating there, did you?
Don't say the bizarre
No,
he has a story about
the show
having
only
sex
plays
a roller coaster.
Oh, really?
Yes. It actually is there, faithful listener. That's true. Subgenius propaganda has percolated even into the disgusting, purulent pornography.
Yes, keep your little eyes on Hot Talk and Penthouse
and
Letter.
Keep both hands on the table.
What about my wild weekend with the
food? Well, that's between you and him.
Him? Oh, I guess it doesn't matter with me.
I gave it the orifice myself, but seriously, folks, so I'll address it. Hey, that's my line. So you asked the question and it was answered. See, that's the problem. People don't realize that everything you hear on this show is true.
Yeah,
it really is
true. You keep